But we can start with you. You can start.
I'm going to talk more about 3D printing because I printed this stupid pressure advanced tower and like I looked at it. Here's the thing that's frustrating to me is that like the Orca slicer that we're using, the software that we're using to put prints onto printers, has these built in like calibrations in it and like a guide that it refers back to kind of explain how to use them. And I've done not only the pressure advance, but also before that, I think it was flow rate. Let me double check what it is. But like I open up the guide that tells me how to judge and measure this tower and I don't see any differences in the corners that I would measure up. Like they all seem pretty good, which seems like a dumb problem to complain about. But like I wanna tune my stuff, right? Yeah, the flow rate was the other one that I did. And like I look at the pictures that are, I don't, have you ever looked at the guide, the tutorial page?
Yeah, I did. I think I did the pressure advance set, like setting test, okay, to like, cause I switched, filaments from, I don't even remember what brand it was. I typically use Inland PLA on my Voron, and then I was switching over to some Polymaker just because I wanted to like test out some of the cool Polymaker colors that I had.
Yeah.
So yeah, I ran the pressure advance one to like calibrate pressure advance based on the new filament.
Okay. Well, if you look at some of the pictures that they have in here, like, I don't know, some of these look like terrible, you know, the flow rate ones. Their samples look so like beat up and crappy. And I'm just like all nine of mine that it prints when I do that test all look good.
I guess, and like,
so
were you running other prints that you felt didn't come out okay? And that's why you were running the test, or you're just running the test to see how your printer is doing?
Mostly to,
like,
that
to, like,
one
benchmark your printer, basically.
Kind of the benchmark, and really just to try and understand, because these are like, my understanding is that these are things that you could do for individual filaments that you're using as well. And so, like, because these are attributes that when you go into the slicer, you can save filament presets. And I don't know, like, if it's meant, maybe generally meant to be like, here's your PLA one, and here's your PET one. Maybe that's more what it's meant for.
I think so, because like me using two different PLAs and trying to check settings based on two different PLAs was pretty negligible. Like,
and maybe
anything, that just tells you that your printer is pretty tuned pretty well. And like, you should just run a couple of benchies to just see like how they come out, you know?
And mostly my problem was like, oh, if I want to think about printing out a bass guitar, maybe I should try and see if I can tune my shit particularly well. But like, I feel like my printer has been pretty good for a while, and now it's part of the thing where I feel like I'm kind of overthinking it a little bit too much when I could just be printing shit out, which of course has led me to the idea that, like, you know, that Bamboo Lab A1, not the mini, the A1 that they just like fixed whatever issue with, seems pretty neat.
Well, so
I could,
like,
think about this stuff even less.
the other thing to consider too is like, just if you, I kind of lost my train of thought, but ultimately, if your printer's getting pretty good results as it is, that's when you can kind of start tweaking some of the other settings with it. So like increasing print speeds and movement speeds and extruding like rates and things like that, like altering those and then running those same tests at those higher speeds and things to calibrate, like, at what level do I set the pressure advance to run PLA at a faster rate? Like, that's the thing, is like, you haven't done a lot of quote unquote tweaking to that machine necessarily.
Yeah.
And you haven't checked off, you haven't like messed with any of those other settings. So you are basically running like stock PLA profiles.
Yeah.
So until you start tweaking some of those speed settings and extrusion settings and heat settings and everything to kind of figure out like at what speed is the best if I want to print at, like how fast can I print and what does my temperature need to be set at? What does my pressure advance need to be set at to print this fast without creating anomalies in the print layers and things like that? This is incredibly nerdy. So if you are actually using any of this for a side quest, this may be a deep end that other people are not willing to jump off on.
This is where the side quest led us, you know?
Yeah, this is one of those side quests where you're bored the entire time, but you're doing it anyways.
This is our third 3D printer one. I think people would expect this at this point. If they're still with us on the 3D printer, because I'll put 3D, I could joke and call it something else. Be like, what's something people have wanted us to do for a very long time? I don't really know, but I could name it that and then be like, just kidding, it's 3D printers.
Yeah, but, I don't, Rainbow Six spoiler cast. But yeah, it's like, I think once you start tweaking some of those other settings is where you should start messing with those profiles, because if you're getting good results with what you're currently doing, then you may have just kind of hit the wall of like, this is the best I can get at this particular level in this particular set of settings.
That's fair. Like the only thing, I guess the only problem that I have encountered was the idea that I was doing the pressure advance calibration, the line method, and like it never came out. That's the only example in this Orca Slicer calibration reference that looks really good on their pictures, and mine came out looking nothing like that, so it didn't make any real sense. And that kind of made me worried about like my bed level. I'm like, are my first layers kind of crap? And like when I look at some of the stuff that I've printed, like I have the base for that Dune thing that I was trying for Nick, and you know, there's a little bit on one edge here that looks a little bit messed up. Like maybe I was a bit too far from the bed, but I am using a bed level mesh. Like I have the CR Touch on it, so I think it can somewhat compensate for that stuff. But
I should send you, I made a file that's literally like, I think two layers thick. Yeah. Like it's just literally a single or two layers of like material just to see. Because I always told Andy, like the first time I got my Voron back from him, that it seemed like the nozzle of the Voron was digging into the print as it was printing it. Like I was getting it, like the layers, it was not quite calibrated exactly right. And some of that could have been attributed to the texturing of the PEI plate that's on there. But he did end up fixing that when he did all the upgrades for my birthday. But I did make a file that's just a single layer, and it's like a square, and I was using that to check my Z offset. Like I was tuning the Z offset to get to see if like maybe I just need to bump my Z offset by like 0.01 millimeters. And like I was bumping it 0.01, 0.02, 0.03. I did like four or five of them just to see what the different levels of Z offset would get me in terms of results. And I ended up finding that like a 0.03 was giving me like a really good result, like based off of the previous results that I had. So I should send that to you and see if maybe you just run that. And I mean, there are a bunch of on Thingiverse, there's a bunch of like, you know, checking your
random check thing. Yeah.
It'll just do a single layer across your entire build plate just to see like what areas are too thin and what areas are too thick kind of thing.
That's what I've seen people posting on Reddit, and I was trying to find like a file for it. Obviously I could have made like a single layer something if I really wanted to, but I just haven't bothered to drill down into it. So that might be interesting to try out, but
yeah, I mean, if you go to Thingiverse and type in bed level, and like the first thing that pops up is like for some thumb wheel for an ANET A6 and A8. And then the second one for me that pops up is an Ender 3 bed level. And it's literally just, it creates a bunch of squares. You know, or there's like on the next row down, there's the bed level stripes test, which runs like a sort of zigzaggy pattern. And then another one that like Ender 3 bed level, which shows you like a couple of solid squares and then like line squares attaching them, you know? So there's a bunch of those, run one of those and just see what happens, you know, and see how it comes out with your standard profile that you've been using for PLA, and just test it out that way is what I would recommend.
Yeah, I'll give that a shot.
But I also, what is it? The Solvo, here we go. The Solvo, Sovol, S-O-V-O-L, S-V-8 is like their version of like the Voron. They're not showing them listed right now, but like it's going to come in way cheaper than a Voron, but it has like Voron spec everything basically.
Huh.
Which might be an interesting one to look at. And then Andy just sent us that video about the Creality K2 Max or whatever with the, it has a multi-material system. And I would venture to guess that that's going to come in a lot cheaper, or probably up to par with like the Bamboo Lab stuff. But this, this Solvo SV8 is basically 350 by 350 by 350. It's a big printer. Like it's basically like a max size Voron.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, if I wanted to go totally into like, I could just get a P1S, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, there's something about the A1 price point with like the AMS. I don't know. I guess it's only like $100. Well, no, that's like I think $400 cheaper than getting the P1S with the AMS. So, yeah, I don't know. Nobody else is listening to this still, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's totally like it. It is what it is, man. I mean, I'll be honest with you, like, the only thing I think is nice about the A1 or the AMS in general, for me at least, is just not having to keep swapping. It makes filament changeovers like so easy.
Yeah.
That's the only benefit that I've found for it. I'm not running multicolored prints. I've ran one since I've had the printer. Like I literally ran one. It's a screw gauge so I can see like how like what my
I remember you posting that. You can see like the length and what.
Yeah, the length and the size of the threading for the screws that you have, cuz like I was having trouble figuring that out for some other stuff that I was working on. But other than that, like I haven't used any of the multicolor capabilities because I don't do model. I'm not here printing Pokemon like the one guy on the Polymaker Instagram, you know? So like it doesn't matter to me. It's cool that it can do it, and I'm sure I'll run into an instance where I want to try it and do more with it. But in all reality, like I'm not using it at all, and it's pointless. So. Like you, with what you're trying to accomplish, you could probably just get away with a P1S like on its own.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair. And, you know, if I ever needed to or wanted to pick up the AMS, it's not like it's, I could still do that. You just pay $100 extra for it, right?
So. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, because like the combo's $559. For the A1 and the A1 with the A1 with the AMS compared to the P1S by itself is what, $599. So if it's really that important to you to have some kind of multi-material or easy swappable, like I do think it is much easier to swap. It is so much easier to swap filaments on the Bamboo than it is on the Voron. Like unbelievably easy. You literally have to just wind the filament up in the AMS and then pull it out and put a new one in. And then you just barely feed the new filament into the AMS and it sucks it in for you.
It. Yeah.
And feeds it. Amazing. Like amazing.
Pretty
technology.
Neat.
So, and the build size, and you're not doing any crazy materials. So the build size of the A1 is the same as the P1S.
Yeah.
So in all reality, like you are getting a lot of printer for that money, like in comparatively, like that is a lot. Like that's cool. It also has the camera stuff on it too. It's got like the AI camera settings, I think, or whatever
light. I think, yeah,
Yeah. So anyways, I'm enjoying the fact that you're getting more into 3D printing and you're getting into more of the minutia of it than I ever did, which is cool. I didn't start getting into the pressure advance and all this other crap until now. And like, you basically started out doing it. Like,
well, it's all kind of like, I don't know. It's very reminiscent of like the material processing that I'd be helping with at my job. So it's a more natural kind of like, yeah, these are the kinds of things that I could think about as well. But, you know, it's funny that I'm like trying to troubleshoot a problem that I'm not having.
Right.
It's just kind of like, yeah, I am kind of using it as a tool of like, I want to learn and understand more about the variables that I do have power over. So, you know, it's been fun. It's nice. It's a cool hobby to have. And
absolutely. That's the one thing I tell everybody is it is a fun, cool hobby. And there are very little hobbies that, like, you kind of feel like you get a return on your investment right away with the level of enjoyment. Like, once everything clicks and, like, it starts, you start making cool, like I said, cool/dumb shit that you don't need.
Like, I've got the Rock's face on them.
Yeah, and I've got a whole box of other scrappy crap that I've printed, like, you know. My latest thing is I've been looking online and finding models of like Renaissance sculptures and like Greek and Roman, like Hellenistic era sculptures that I've always wanted my own of. So I printed off a David, like Michelangelo's David.
Nice.
And today I printed off a
Are you doing it in like a silk or a marble?
No, I've been doing it in gray PLA. Like I have a matte gray PLA that looks pretty solid. Okay. But I did a Venus de Milo today, like just for shits. And there's a few other ones that I haven't been able to find. Like I want, like there's an Egyptian statue, I believe, like it's called Menkaure. And it's just like this pharaoh, like standing very like rigid vertical. It was like one of the, it's like stuff that I've pulled from my art history class that I took. And yeah, just like these weird statues that I've always really liked and I want copies of, like. Part of it was spawned from someone on Reddit posting a picture. It was a Caesar bust that they were in Europe and there was a gift shop selling a life-size Caesar bust for like 290 euros or something like that. And the guy was like, that's $5 worth of filament. Like, what the fuck? And I was like, that's genius. Like, I could print off all the statues I always wanted, you know, like I could totally do that, you know, because there's people that'll go around and they 3D scan these things and they just post them up on Thingiverse and MakerWorld. You know, you can find like a proper 3D scan model of the Thinker, which being in the Midwest in Detroit, we have one of the three original Thinkers at the DIA. Like that is an original. That's not just something they made and threw in front of the DIA. Like that is an original Thinker. That's cool as shit. And I bet you, if you go down to the DIA right now, they're probably selling 3D printed versions of that in the gift shop, like, because they've got rights to it somehow.
Yeah.
But we could go down there with our cell phones and 3D scan it using the LiDAR on your iPhone and then print your own. Like,
that's the thing is I feel like, you know, I've seen some of the like jigs that people make of like making a little rotatable thing, like stage for you to scan something.
Yeah, the little scanners.
Small steps. Yeah. And I'm kind of like, that's pretty cool. I do feel like it does kind of raise that entrepreneurial spirit in you of like, what's something that I can find that I'd be able to throw up on Etsy and just print out and make for people.
So that's the thing is like if you follow some of those Instagram accounts, right? This entire side quest is 3D printing, by the way. Suck it. if you follow some of those Instagram accounts of dudes like posting their 3D printing things, like they're making some of the like a lot of these models. And if you join their Patreon, you get full licensing rights to resell them on Etsy or whatever portal you want to sell them.
Interesting.
Which is fucking genius. Like, so
yeah.
Or you be like dad and you're like, oh, I need this one part for my Model A, and you model it your fucking self, and then you're like, I could sell this. And then you have your sons who are like, Dad, you should sell that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
We'll help you print them. And then mom and dad are going to listen to this and be like, oh, yeah, maybe they're right.
there was some guy, I follow this YouTuber called Macho Nacho, and he does a lot of mods for retro game consoles. But he at one point made, like, he built a brand new Sega Nomad or something, basically, out of, like, he did this really insane modification for it, but it came with a new case, and he pointed out, like, there's this dude who's done a bunch of rough 3D scans of old game console cases, and I bought a Saturn at some point in the last couple of years, but the case is kind of junky on it, and I was kind of like, it'd be pretty cool to just be able to print out a Saturn case.
To 3D print a new Saturn case?
Yeah, and see how that comes out.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So, you know, I feel like that kind of thing is the kind of thing that I would want to do with it, but I tried to do stuff with the PSP Go, but I don't know. Like, that's the thing, is like the dimensionality of it all is really hard to dial in and make sure that, like, screws are going to fit and all that type of stuff. So
I think, I don't remember if Dad figured it out or if Andy was saying that, like, if you're using Fusion 360, you can tell it what material you're using and it'll automatically, like, increase tolerances for you or something like that.
Yeah, like maybe adjust for shrinkage or something. And
yeah. Oh, I think I found the Mankauri thing that I was looking. No, this is a bad scan. Never mind. I got really excited for a second. But there's something else I was going to talk about with this that we're getting into. I don't know. Anyways. Yeah, or you can just, you know, print dumb shit like me all the time to make yourself happy.
That works too. I feel like there was something else, but I can't remember what
I had music stuff I wanted to hit real quick, just because I had my, I don't know if he listens to this, but my youngest employee at the shop, is a cool kid who likes to screen print, and he said, I don't remember his exact wording of this, but yesterday I was listening to Glass Casket at the shop on my computer, and the song In Between the Sheets, which is arguably their best song, came on, and the singing part came on with the dude from Remembering Never, Pour Some Out. That guy passed away last year, I'm pretty sure. And the guitar solo that rips after that, or like during and then after that part, is so good. And I just sat there and I just recited the whole guitar solo as it was happening. And the kid looks over at me, he's like, man, he's like, that's a really cool song. Who is that? And I was like, that's Glass Casket. And I was like, they're a very cool band. And he pulls it up on his phone. He's like, which album was it? They got two of them. I'm like, oh, it's We're Gathered Here Today. He's like, okay, cool. And he like saved it. And then like today he was asking me about it again, cause he forgot like which song it was that I was listening to. And I told him it's In Between the Sheets. And he's like, yeah, it only has 76,000 plays here or something. Or it was like, I think he's on Apple. So he's looking at Apple Music. It had more than that. It's like 100,000 plays or something. But he's like, yeah, that's how I know you listen to the good shit, is because it doesn't have like a million plays. And I'm like, cool.
I haven't thought about Glass Casket in a long time. But you know what I am? I feel like I am more frequently seeing on Instagram some reels that have Fall of Troy in it. Where I'm kind of like, it's really weird to me that there's, like, the Fall of Troy didn't seem like they were, obviously they were bigger than a lot of other bands out there, but I didn't feel like they had the kind of reach where I'd be like seeing people.
Well, they were in Guitar Hero. FCP Remix. Really? FCP Remix was in Guitar Hero 3, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe that's it.
That's why they got huge, was because of Guitar Hero, which... like, and that's the thing, is you're seeing more of them now, because and I've come to learn this with these young kids at the shop, is that a lot of my music from when I was 18 is now relevant to them again. So like, they, one of them came in and was like, you've heard of the Deftones? And I'm like, yeah, they're only like my favorite fucking band. Like, of course, here's a picture of me standing with Chino giving him a hug. Like, you know, like there's that. Like, and like there's this new, like this music that was like 2000 to 2005 is now hitting that younger generation, much like my generation was picking up, like in our 20s, like my generation was picking up a lot of stuff from the 80s. Like, so there's this 20-year reset gap of like, this is what we need to listen to now kind of thing. Which leads me to my next segment of talking about my band, the Gamma Foundation, again, because I started an Instagram account because we, Ryan and I, were discussing the idea of like, how do us almost, you know, sub 40-year-old men navigate social media with our music that we want people to care about. And Nicole graciously said TikTok, and I'm like, I can't do it. I just can't do TikTok. So I'm sticking with Instagram for the time being. And, it's, we haven't like made any, I don't know, large leaps in followers and likes or anything like that. But I downloaded an app that does that thing where you can create like basically like it's multiple posts that make up one giant image in your profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've decided I've decided that's just, that's all I'm going to do on that account is I'm just going to post those big images that make really cool, like collage style images in our profile. One, because it gets more likes, like because you're getting multiple images out at a time, and then you're having like the same people are that are cycling through the algorithm are liking those things. Because I'm seeing a lot of the same people like them within the same time frame, which boosts like the algorithmic measurements or whatever. But so if you're listening and you want to see my band's content, it's at Gamma Foundation, GAMMAFONDATION. Yeah, that's how you spell it. On Instagram. And I'm sure I'll post some other like single piece, like, you know, garbage here and there, but I really just want to do the big, I've been doing big, like largely Photoshopped ultimately. Like I'm using my phone to do all of it. So I'm using Google Snapseed to like edit the photos and do cool like filters and things to them and just make them look all fancy. And then I used an app to like do the multi-split thing. But it works really well and it just, it's cool. I just want people to care about my band because it was really important to me. And I don't know how much the Mod Orange guys listen to this podcast. That band was important to me too, but the Gamma Foundation hits different. Just because I feel like we, like Mod Orange was, it didn't start feeling like super collaborative until towards the end of the band, because a lot of it was we were like basically playing songs that Mark wrote a long time ago. Whereas the Gamma Foundation, like we kind of wrote that from the ground up. A lot of it. I mean, Ryan took some of the ideas from his previous band and expanded on them. But yeah, the Gamma Foundation is something I'm incredibly proud of. And with these kids these days bringing up, coming to me asking if I've ever heard of the Deftones and shit like that, like they would like my band. If they listened to my band, they would like my band. These younger generations, you know, old man Boomer John saying, these younger generations who are talking about Deftones and Tool and
Pac-Man video games
and Incubus even. Like I've had people tell me I sound like Brandon Boyd. I don't hear that at all in my voice at all. And I'm not saying that now to like, you know, get any clout out of it. Like it's just, it's a comparison that's been made about my singing voice like multiple times. I don't hear it at all. But like, you know, Incubus, Deftones, Tool, Chevelle, like a lot of these heavier bands that are 20 plus years old, like we draw a lot of inspiration from. And if you are of a younger generation and you listen to any of those bands now, you might dig my band. So please do check it out. And that's my final bit of shameless self-promotion.
It's really crazy to me how many of those bands are still around and doing things, you know? Like, I feel like there's a weird, I mean, obviously, looking like the Chili Peppers, they've been playing music together in some form since, like, the 80s, basically.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's forever. But even, like, looking at Incubus, like, Pearl Jam, like, there's so many bands out there that are, like, they don't, I don't know, anything
Pearl Jam just put out new music.
I know. Like, Pearl Jam is still putting out new music, which is crazy. Chili Peppers obviously put out, like, 2 albums 2 years ago or something like that. And so it's kind of, like, but I don't know. It's just, it's weird to me that, like, there's these weird, it's like you said, these weird pockets of music that keep popping up. Like, I just saw this dude on YouTube who did, he was like, remember that stupid fucking Bowling for Soup song?
Which 1985. One?
Well, yeah, all of them, but 1985. It was just like somebody saw, he saw this tweet that was like, if 1985 was written today, it would be called 2005. Or something like that. And so this dude went and rewrote 1985 with lyrics about 2005. And it was,
oh my God.
Just, it made me feel so fucking old. And I was laughing the entire time. It's not particularly good. I just thought it was really funny. And so, you know, I don't know. It's just,
there is a guy.
Getting older is very strange.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a guy on YouTube. His name's Alex Melton.
You told me about him before.
And he goes and he takes like older songs, or he just kind of like genre bends different songs. You know, like he did, I think one of the more recent ones was he took, I don't remember which Coldplay song, but he's like, if Coldplay was emo and like,
it was Fix You, I think was the one that I saw.
Yeah,
I saw the thumbnail.
And he did it in like almost a Midwestern emo style, which, yeah, if you're not familiar with that genre, check out American Football, probably the best example of Midwestern emo style. I could also reference a band that I was in, but I don't like them that much, so I'm not going to, but I'm on their Wikipedia page. So if you just look me up on Wikipedia, I probably pop up.
There you go.
But yeah, like that guy's really cool. He does, like, what I like about him is everything he does is completely self-produced, and like, yeah, so he's recording everything himself. He films everything, like multi-camera setup. Like, this dude puts so much work into those videos. And like, it's funny, we were talking about it at work today. I was talking about how like I gotta make demonstration videos for every process in the shop, basically, yeah, to like show people how to do things and do them correctly. And Dave's like, yeah, he's like, that's what the Armadillo TikTok should be, is just you showing people how to do things our way, like how we do them, how to clean screens, how to coat screens, how to print films, how to set up separations, how to mix colors, how to set up a job on an MHM automatic press, how to set up a job on a manual press, like going through and doing all those things. And I looked at him, I'm like, do you know how long those take to make? He's like, yeah, like a minute and a half. And I'm like, no, like the video might be a minute and a half long, but that probably took somebody 40 hours to make. Like,
yeah,
it's a job in and of itself.
Well, that's, I mean, the interesting thing would be to kind of just like, even if you did some, if you set up a GoPro and did some time lapses, or even not even a GoPro, you probably do it with an app on your phone or the camera on your phone. And just do a time lapse of you doing some of that stuff and then just doing narration over it or something like that. It certainly takes time, but, you know, I wonder if that, like, people doing their jobs on Instagram is or on TikTok.
Oh, it's incredibly, popular. It's incredibly I really should just get a GoPro to strap to my forehead to just map out everything I do in a day. And then, like you said, throw it up there. Like do a speed run through it and narrate the whole thing and just be like, just post that. People would, yeah, watch that for sure. 100%.
Like I feel like the ones that I've seen or that stuck with me at least are people like, there's the woman who's like a beekeeper. I don't know if you've seen some of those ones.
Yeah, I've seen her.
She goes and recovers.
Well, she goes
in,
yeah, from like people's houses and stuff where they don't want bees, but she's like, I'll come take them out for free.
Yeah. Those I stop and watch those every time. And then there's like another person who like cleans up old gravestones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
To like make them visible again. So like, you know, and I feel like the mechanics of t-shirt printing and embroidery and stuff like that would be pretty.
Here's
watch.
The old man boomer in me. I really like the guy who goes and cleans up people's lawns for them.
Yeah.
I watch that every time he rolls up in my feed. And now that I'm talking about it, he's probably going to come up in my feed like 20 times more. But he like rolls up and he's like, hey, like, I was just wondering if you didn't mind if I like, you know, cleaned up your sidewalk and your lawn and everything. And they're like, well, I don't have any money. And he's like, no, I do it for free. I'm just going to film it while I do it. And then I'm going to post it on my YouTube page. And he just runs a landscaping service.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know like how much work he's gotten because of doing that.
But he
does him. Such a great job, and it's just him. Like, it's just him, and he's just going, and he'll literally like he'll mow the lawn, and then he'll edge the whole lawn, and he'll do a bunch of weed whacking, and then he'll power wash the driveway, and like, and it's just like, man, like, and that's again, that guy put 8 hours into that one video that maybe took a minute and a half to watch. Like, this isn't you. We could sit here and you know, boomer talk back and forth about how like. These younger kids wasting all their time on their cell phones and blah, 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 blah. But like some of them are actually doing some incredible stuff with it. Like it's incredible. It's fascinating.
Yeah. It certainly makes people
wonder like if we would have had this technology 20 years ago, you know, when I was 18, like,
I'm horrified of that though. Like,
what would I have done with it at that point? Like, where would I have been? I know, for damn sure, my mental health would be in the absolute shitter. Oh, like
1,000%. But like, I don't know. Like, I think I have on my own YouTube channel like videos of things that I made in video production because we used to do the announcements and I would do stupid. Like, we were coming up with dumb bits of like. We decided, I don't know how it happened, but we would shoot me on the green screen and we decided that we would turn the image negative and then we chroma keyed the purple out because the green screen would turn purple and we just put pictures of nebulas behind me and then we would do something to my voice where we'd like phase it and like put like multiple voices to kind of like a chorus pedal or whatever. Yeah. And it would be me being like, hey, you need to go to the Lost and Found and pick up your stuff from the Lost and Found, because if you don't do that, they're going to throw all of it out and then you can't have it anymore. So you should go. The Lost and Found is getting full. Please go check it out. And like, and we called it Al X the Alien. And then at some point, because like you would get assigned the announcements for 1 week. And so at the end of the week, we just did the segment where it was everybody saying goodbye to Al X the Alien. And they just, I did the Jason thing where I went like that.
Yeah.
And then I like boost off with like, we put these pictures of flames at the bottom of my legs as it cut off as I moved up at the top of the picture. And it's just, so there would be so much stupid stuff that we came up with in video that would be on the internet. And like, I'd be mortified of that. But at the same time, I have some of it up there anyway. So it's not like, I don't know. I think it's funny, but I might be some of the only people that find it funny. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm bummed I don't have more, you know, more of a record of some of the stuff I did in terms of my music and things. I mean, that's half the reason the Gamma Foundation even started back up again is so we could record songs we never had a chance to record before.
Yeah.
So, and I will find the WAV files. I have them somewhere. I will find the original WAV files of our recording so that I can send those up on Bandcamp and so I can actually use them to get vinyl pressed.
Yeah,
that would do that.
I always wanted to get like, I don't know if it would be a full episode or what it would be, but I wanted to do like a particularly funny or good part of some of the podcasts and just get like a couple vinyl copies of things. But like the print runs that you have to do on those are so big that it would just be kind of stupid to do it for nothing, just for fun. But
there's, I found if you look for lathe cut vinyl, you can get smaller runs for cheaper than having them actually pressed.
Pressed. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I found a place that'll do a lathe cut vinyl. They'll do a single one for $60.
That's literally like they like the old school phonograph recording where they're using
it's
the
like it's a vinyl,
it
it's vinyl. A vinyl disc. And then there's a cutting stylus that goes around and cuts the grooves.
That's so cool. That you know how many times I've been into like, or like, I feel like I've gone into Third Man down in Detroit a couple times during like holiday nights or whatever at Wayne State, and like just watching them pressing the vinyl, I'm like, this is a pretty cool thing that you could do, just pressing vinyl all day.
There's like, there's a company
on your body, but
I don't remember the name of it, but there is a company that will basically you pay them, it's like $170,000, and they will come in and they will bring an entire vinyl pressing machine to you, train you on it, and you just need to provide the space, and then it's your machine to do whatever with. And Jack White, I think 2 years ago, went out on YouTube and released a video begging Sony and BMG to start cutting vinyl again because he can't keep up. He literally was like, I'm begging you to please start producing vinyl again because I can't just, like, we don't have the capacity to do it. And there's so much demand for vinyl right now. So I showed Dave that machine and he's like, well, shit, you know,
let's get it.
And I was like, yeah, we shut down the t-shirt shit. We just start pressing vinyl. Fuck all the t-shirt stuff. Vinyl all day.
Just keep the auto press going. That's it.
No, fuck it. Get rid of that shit too. Get rid of all of it. Sell it all. Only press vinyl.
That would be awesome. I have one last story that I'll tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if you... So, at one point, I was tasked in our video class with making a commercial because they were having an artist or an author named Pam Flowers from Alaska. She was going to be coming in, and our teacher knew that I had been to Alaska, and I had a bunch of pictures and things. And this was, of course, like... dead in the middle of like you guys liking Between the Buried and Me and Alaska, the song just came out. Yeah. And I of course was like, I should set it to Alaska by Between the Buried and Me. And it's just like, it's literally just like, it's about this author who wrote children's books that's coming to the library to give a talk about writing or something like that. And so I just made the slideshow of a bunch of our pictures from our family trip to Alaska, and I set it to Between the Buried and Me's Alaska. And then I was like, I made it. Do you want to take a, like, I didn't think it was ever going to get to air, cause I just was like, I can just drag a different song in. And, but I asked her teacher, I was like, do you want to watch it? Make sure it's good. She's like, no, I trust you. I bet it's pretty good. So then I handed it in and they played it. And then like she immediately like found me and was like, you need to change the music for that. And I was like, okay, fine. So I put like Lenny Kravitz Fly Away as like the song or whatever. Cause I was like, okay, this is what you're going to want for that. But I at least got it through once where it was, I got Between the Buried and Me playing on the announcements, through my Alaska author commercial. So both of those are available on my YouTube channel if people would like to watch them.
The Berklee High School video production class has put out some serious gems. I don't know, and shout out to Nico, who I hope still listens to our podcast. But I will never ever forget the video that him and his brother did with Jeff Goldsmith. They did a documentary about being addicted to vacuuming.
I feel like I remember.
And it was one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my entire life. And I will never forget about that. So if Nico, if you're listening and you still have that, please post it somewhere so we can see it. Because I just remember it. Like I saw it at the film festival that year that they did it. And mind you, his brother is now like a director, like, or like he's running camera. I don't even know if he's directing or he's actually like director of photography or what. He's a bigwig in some way. Yeah, he's doing some serious shit now. So props to Alex for being a badass. But yeah, like I'll never forget that video and how funny it was. And I just remember sitting in the auditorium during the film festival and literally crying laughing at that film because it was so funny. And it could have just been being young and dumb. I don't know. But I remember how happy it made me. And that I'll never forget that. Like, so thank you, Nico and Alex Grossfeld, for that.
No, I remember my last story is that we did, I don't know if I ever showed it to you. And I think I still might have a copy of it somewhere. But Eric Daniel at one point was like, I need to do something for the film festival, and I think I have this idea where I just want to do this office style mockumentary about me trying to join the step team at Berkeley. And so he and I, it was just him and I like setting up the camera of him doing like exercises and like trying to get ready for step tryouts. And then we literally like, we walked in because Mrs. Price was the one who was like head of the step team at the time. And we were like, hey,
pour some out.
Yes, pour some out. But we were like, we're doing the step team documentary where we want Eric to try to join the step team. We're going to have him come in at lunch and do a tryout for you in front of your class. And you're going to give him your honest opinion. And then we're going to walk out. And literally, like, Eric and I walk in with this camera. He's dressed in, like, the shortest shorts, like, gym shorts that he could possibly find.
Yeah, which and were he, from his normal wardrobe.
Yeah. And he was like, I'm here to try for the step team. And she's like, we didn't give her a script or anything. She's like, there's no step tryouts today. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I wanted to try out for the step team. And, like, eventually he wears her down to, like, let him try out. And he literally, like, he's not even actually, like, stomping and clapping like he ever watched Stomp the Yard. He's, like, basically doing the Running Man in place as his, like, step tryout. And then she's like, we have a name for that kind of dancing here, but I hesitate to use it. And he just, like, gets this really defeated look on his face and walks out of the classroom. It was wonderful. It was a great time. I'm still very proud of it. I know that if I ever posted it online, I think Eric would hunt me down and be like, absolutely not. But
just don't link him to it. But I feel like, yeah, I remember seeing that. I must have
shown it to you at some point. I don't know.
Yeah. It sounds super familiar.
But
Eric's doing big shit now too, isn't he? Yes. He's like,
yeah, I see. He's in Texas doing a lot. He works for a cool company doing a lot of cool stuff. And he does a lot of like cool stop motion stuff on his own too.
That's awesome.
That he's trying out. So yeah,
it's fun being surrounded by and friends with people who do cool creative stuff.
For sure. For sure.
I hope people feel the same way about us.
Yeah. No, that'd be good. But
so anyways, all right, that's a long enough side quest.
Yeah, longer than it probably should have been.
That's okay. We spend most of the time talking about 3D printing, so.
Yeah.
These side quests are more for us anyways. But yeah, thanks for listening.
It's literally just like we don't talk enough in real life, so let's just have a side quest to talk.
Right. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Peace.